All right, we are back. We are back. I am back. I have missed the last couple episodes. Javier Haas.
I don't know if that was a secret or not, but now you got to tell us.
I wasn't going to tell everybody, but y'all, I had a really bad turned ankle issue minutes before Thursday's podcast. Tuesday I was going to be off anyways, so I ended up missing the entire week. It was I would have rather been on the podcast with you. How about that? I'll say that. But all that said,
fun at least where you like wait, what's playing that Tuesday? With your kid or something.
That was Tuesday. I'm sorry. That was Tuesday. And then Thursday was just, it just didn't go away. it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I was helping my brother bring suitcases upstairs. And as I was coming back down to get the next load, I missed the last stair.
Nothing embarrassing about that, man.
I feel like out. I just got 30 years older in the eyes of our audience, but that's okay. That's okay. Welcome to Cannabis Insider. We're not talking about my medical happenings. The ankle is still swollen.
So you know what is great for that? Cannabis topicals. You just get a little bit of a good cannabis topical, rub it on your ankle, and it's...
I live in North Carolina.
CBD?
Yeah, we can do CBD. I will say, though... This state's so interesting. You guys want a little insider baseball? We have those like political yard signs, but there's nothing on them except THCA. That's it. They're just all over the place. There's THCA, there's THCV, there's all the deltas. Obviously, CBD and hemp are everywhere.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah. They have no, honestly, they welcome it. They welcome it in North Carolina. The cannabis industry thinks everybody wants marijuana. Everybody does want marijuana, but honestly, it's up to us to educate the consumers. Anyway, we're getting into a deep rabbit hole here, Javi. But let's let everybody know what's happening. Brian, what's up? Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you. Aaron Thomas, let's get going. We have a loaded episode today, so you're not going to hear Javi and I pontificate all that much. We are going to let our guests do that. As with every Tuesday, we're going to start off with our good friend Morgan Patsia from Poseidon Investment Management.
You got it.
That was convinced it was the other way around. Poseidon Investment Management. Morgan's going to join us on. Then we're going to dive into our good friend over at UCS Advisor, Dr. David Kunick, followed by, and last but certainly not least, a really, really cool company. Javi, I don't know if you know them.
But yes. Yes, I do.
Yes. Yes, you know. Yes, Cannabis. We have their CEO, Matthew Martinez. It is a packed episode today. Thrilled for all three of these guests. And with that being said, we have a ton to talk about. I think this is our first episode with Morgan since the HHS letter last week. So let's start. Javi, you ready?
That's very
a,
ready.
Heck yes, that's a heck yes face. Aaron Thomas, let's get him up. Morgan, welcome in, man. How are you?
All right, here we go. It's September. How we doing?
You know, I feel like September started off better than August.
Oh yeah. That,
you know, I think
a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit better.
I am wearing a hoodie to celebrate the occasion, and it's special for Morgan and generally. So it's you can see it, and Morgan will know why I'm saying that it's special for him, but I am feeling more flowerful today.
There we go. Nice.
I don't know why that's special for Morgan, but it's a special hoodie because you're wearing it.
Morgan. He loves the packs.
I love it. All right, yes. Morgan, give us the lowdown, man. Give us your initial reaction. That letter comes out, late last Tuesday, early Wednesday, I think. What ran through your mind?
Honestly, can I
speak open, man?
Profanities. One, I was like, holy sh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can curse. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So holy shit. Honestly. I mean, it was just like mind blowing. And you know what? Honestly, the first thing that came to mind was what have I been professing for a lot this year is a known catalyst is not a catalyst. Well, guess what? We got something that was not known. And look what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Epic. For August, late going into a holiday weekend, explosion of activity. I mean, and how quickly the animal spirits, I mean, getting phone calls from people that had written off the sector and are all of a sudden like, oh, this is a game changer. So, I mean, it was just total validation that the catalysts, real catalysts, are not known. And there you go. So that was, and you know, you just look at all the things that have happened subsequently. I love the discourse, honestly, because I think we don't know exactly how this is going to go. So I love how there's lawyers on both sides, either like this is like a clear shot to 280E removal. Wait, this is not that simple yet. You know, there's just a lot of tension around this because it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a big deal. So, I mean, it's incredibly exciting for the industry. But I don't think we can rest on our laurels yet. Mm-hmm. This could certainly not go great. If we just get complacent again and we don't keep pushing that this is handled properly, I feel like the industry could get taken from us. And so there's an opportunity to do this right, where we can have a thriving industry that's profitable, free cash flow, that allows us to continue to mature. But we've got to be careful and we got to keep doing the work.
So I know Javi's going to want to jump in here, but just to get through this part rather quickly, the big happening here would be getting rid of 280E. Should it be Schedule 3 or higher? You know, I did see in a note, I believe from Needham this morning, that this also offers the opportunity of uplisting for US-based companies. Is that in actuality, is that something that you see as a direct result from this?
I see it as a subsequent event. I don't think it's all going to get wrapped up in one. Capital markets, banking reform are not a part of scheduling. All it does, I thought Matt McGinley from Needham did a good job of the report. He does note the immediate initial benefit is the 280E and the lowered risk, perceived risk profile. And that should help shepherd more change. But they're still going to need an act of Congress to do some of these things, or the exchanges that, you know, could acknowledge or take certain steps. But it's not a given. And for those that have also been hearing me drone on for a lot of this year, I've been saying for a long time that safe banking is a very low probability, and I would expect something else to happen first. And here we are. And so, you know, talking about rescheduling is something that's happening first, because right, there's a pretty clear path from here, unless the DEA says no. And that's not a given either. Like, we can't assume the DEA is just going to follow just because they have in other instances. So, yeah.
I have two follow-ups for you, like clarifications. One is, why would a rescheduling not necessarily imply the possibility for companies to uplist, right? Like, if they're working with a now like DEA accepted substance, wouldn't all of these companies be subject to an uplisting, or would they, do you think, and like maybe have to register with the DEA anyways to uplist? Like, what's your rationale behind saying, I'm not sure?
Well, it's from, at least from what I've been reading, it doesn't automatically, it's not an automatic. I mean, one, these companies have to be compliant with the ability to uplist. And two, I think it's been pretty clear that we need clarity from the exchanges that if they're now okay with it, because they've previously been a clear embargo that we're not welcome on their exchanges under their structure. So, that's why I think there's a bit more. I don't think it's just an automatic where everybody would just be free to do that.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one is, you say, you know, this poses a risk for the industry to be taken away from us. Mm-hmm. By who or whom? Yeah. I never know. But por quién? By whom? And like, what do you mean?
Yeah. So I thought, interestingly, today, on Marijuana Moment, we had the Congressman Gates out of Florida, right? Came out and basically said, you know, be careful because this could push the industry into Big Pharma's hands, and we don't want that. I don't think that's a benefit at all. I've always believed that in a rescheduling, you know, the panacea for us is descheduling. We're not going to get that. That they're just not going to go, and obviously we're not, right? The HHS made the recommendation to go to 3, didn't make the recommendation just to remove it from scheduling altogether. So this was the first step. Now, I think there's some benefits from people that want to pursue a true medical path, that do want to go the pharmaceutical path, but we don't want the overreach to be all encompassing. And I did think it was interesting or a bit concerning feeding into that narrative a little bit was the White House press secretary said that Biden has always been of support of what was it, decriminalizing or legalizing medicinal marijuana. They're still not willing to move beyond this, like trying to put it in this little bucket instead of talking about it as, you know, it's just a legal adult use industry and a medical industry. And so that's something that I, you know, I do take note of like that, that is a, you know, pretty specific qualifier when you are limiting its potential application by only talking about it in medical. So that's why I just say like, we just have to keep pushing and make sure that this is, you know, all encompassing for not just medical, but adult use. And I think it actually bolsters better for both sides. You know, I think a true medical cannabis should be, you know, under a much different premise other than a tax code, yeah, basically how it is today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. And I also like calling it medical, right? Like even in Latin American countries, you know, we make a clear difference between medical and therapeutic, for instance, right? Because medical carries this weight, right? This very clear meaning of the many implications it has, of the careful scientific approach, right?
Exactly.
So a couple more points here, and then we do have to wrap up, but I want you to talk about, you know, I guess for me, like how this affects the markets, liquidity, from an investor standpoint, right? You know, that's your bread and butter, you know, so I want to hear from you about that. But secondly, I saw, just to kind of wrap up the point we're talking about with medical cannabis and rescheduling, the FDA had a chance, you know, is able to participate. Federal government's able to participate in a Schedule I drug, in a Schedule I substance, but they did not. So a lot of these, you know, kind of points pushing that Schedule III opens up the opportunity for the government to step in and restructure the entire industry. History says that's not going to happen. Now, do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, at the basic premise, cannabis is still a very stigmatized substance in the eyes of the government. And I think we're still healing those wounds that have been inflicted on us and society for decades. And I just don't think it's going to be an immediate change. Mm-hmm. I think it helps cure with age because our elected officials are just getting older. And so eventually they will be replaced by younger people that have much different mindset around all of this. It just takes a long time. But to your point, yeah, I mean, they made researching cannabis so difficult, and it was purely intentional. You could have, to your point, you could have researched many other Schedule I substances with way less friction, because they just didn't want it. They knew, because they know the basic understanding, like the government knows that, you know, the realities of cannabis. It's just all wrapped up in all this. There still is a lot of drug war rhetoric because these are really old people that are running our country. And so they grew up with that. And so there's still a lot of them that believe in it. And so, and a lot of these different groups, while you're talking about the FDA, the DEA, the DOJ, you know, these are political organizations as much as they're not supposed to be. I mean, I was very happy, obviously, to see the HHS come forward with science data-based decision-making as they should. But you want to see that obviously follow suit through more of government. You know, DEA is a perfect example. Like they've got this 5-point checklist that they're going to have to go through, and they just did it. What was it, back in 2016? We were just talking about this internally, and you know, we didn't do so well on that 5-point checklist. And that's not necessarily as scientific based, as there's a little bit more qualitative, and that's where there's, you know, there's some risk in there, even though there's good status quo to follow HHS. Anyway, I think you make a good point. The FDA, they could have, they didn't. And so what's going to change, at least maybe the perception is improving around that. And so maybe they will. But regardless, there are hundreds of thousands of people now employed in this industry, and we need to have it as a continue on that path and not limit its capability. And, you know, at the end of the day, we still don't really know what cannabis wants to be when it grows up. You know, we don't know what it wants to be from a medical perspective. There could be tons more that can happen, and I'd love to see what can happen there. But we got to stop putting people in jail and do the right thing here.
Yeah, we do need to keep going here, Morgan. I could talk about this with you all day, but let's save a little bit of this for next week. Maybe we can chat a bit about, you know, what's going to happen with investors. You know, are they going to wait for the DEA to take action? What's going to happen there? Obviously, we'll have more to talk about stock wise. And capital markets wise this time next week, hopefully still good. Yeah. And people don't just trash it in the next week. But all that said, Morgan, always a pleasure, man. Anything else that's on your mind before we bring over Dr. David?
I think this is a positive moment for us as an industry, and let's build on positivity. It's definitely been a very hard long journey to get to this point, and it's been pretty tough on each other out there, but you know, this is let's not get complacent, but let's also enjoy potentially a big win.
Amen. I'm with you, Morgan. Appreciate your insights as always, sir. Thank you. See you next week.
See you. I can't get over that, figuring out what cannabis wants to be when it grows. That was hilarious.
Yeah. All right, man. Honestly, there's a lot to unpack there, but y'all, there's a great place to get more information about this. And it's Javier Haas's team at Benzinga.com/cannabis. Oh. All of your news throughout the day, or download the Benzinga app.
That.
Slide over to the cannabis news feed. Every cannabis article, just in continuous infinite scroll. It's amazing. Beautiful, all updated.
You know, maybe not as good at that, but I'm kidding. You know where else people can figure out what this means? Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference coming to Chicago September 27 and 28. BZCannabis.com. Come join us. Be there or be square. No more plugs for us. Let's keep this clipping. Next up, we have Dr. David of USC Advisors. I am super excited to hear all about what they're doing and why they're not consultants.
Let's do it. Dr. David, welcome in, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good, Javier. Just so you know, it's UCS, not USC. It's okay, because people on the West Coast do that all the time, but I'll make it really simple. Do you know what UCS stands for?
What does it stand for?
It stands for two things. For cannabis people, use cannabis safely. Woo! And for non-cannabis people, use common sense. Mm.
Poof, the least of all senses, though. You know that.
Just saying, my friend. Just saying.
That's some good one-liners.
You did the rookie mistake of, USC. No, UCS. It's all good.
That's what happens when you don't read the script. I wanted to go on off by heart, but you know, but don't blame cannabis. It's my memory. It has nothing to do with cannabis. Let's clear out one more thing. Do you have PMA? What is PMA?
PMA, positive mental attitude. Mm. So my COO was in a punk rock band back in the day, and there's a song, you gotta have your PMA, positive mental attitude. And let's call a spade a spade. Raising money is not fun. Mm-mm. Raising money can really suck, and you have less than a 3% success rate. But you know what? Maintain that positive mental attitude. And if you see us, me or my COO, Chris Vaglio, at Benzinga Chicago at the end of September, reach out to us to get a PMA pin. And if you see anyone there wearing a PMA pin, you know it came from us. So
maintain I love that
positive mental attitude.
I'm going to be wearing one. I'm making the decision now. I'm going to have positive. As an event provider, can get stressful. So I'm going to look down at that pin, and I'm going to be positive about it.
Ellie, no matter what's going on at that conference, at the end of the day, we're blessed. There's a conference going on. We're surrounded by great people who want to be there. You know what? Let's just have fun with it. I mean, Benzinga, Miami, you know how much rain there was? And people were complaining. And then I go, this is a blessing. They go, what do you mean? I go, that means no one's leaving the hotel. It means everyone's staying here. People don't want to get wet. This is amazing. People that would go, boo, boo, boo. Now they're here and they want to talk to you.
Best case scenario. I'm
feeling that PMA, that positive mental attitude.
Blessed, man. So bless us a little bit with what UCS does, right? I mean, we got a little bit of it, but give us the full run through of what you guys are up to.
So UCS Advisors, we are professional capital raising advisors. What does that mean? That means that we're more than just consultants. Javier, I'll tell you the difference, because there's a major difference between a consultant and an advisor. But we're the ones that say, you know what, besides getting a line of credit, besides me trying to get a bank loan, and besides me going through a traditional broker dealer, we actually teach you the skill set on how to raise money. If you look at every successful entrepreneur, they learn the skill set on how to raise money, how to raise capital. And we teach that skill set. And not only do we teach that skill set, as we say here at UCS Advisors, when you come to us, you're kind of like a dirty green nugget. And our job is to turn you into a nice, shiny green diamond. Mm. And we want to make sure that you become investable. There are a lot of great deals that are out there that people want to invest in, but they do the wrong thing. They're missing a piece of information. They don't know how to talk to an investor properly. And we teach that entire skill set so they can actually attract investors, actually have people want to invest in them.
Can I do one point of clarification before Javi jumps in there? The 3% success rate that you mentioned earlier, is that in the current capital markets of cannabis, or is that just in general?
That's in general.
Man.
So people forget, let's just call spade a spade. Like you go to an accountant to deal with your accounting issues, pro forma. You might go to a consultant just for your application writing or just for your business plan. You go to your lawyer to work on your legal stuff. But where do you turn to when it actually comes to learning how to raise capital? Where do you go to actually learn fundraising skills? And that's what we do. And people don't know the statistics. 3% success rate. So out of every 100 people you talk to, 3 of them, on average, we'll invest in your deal. Let's take it another step further. Javier and Elliot, how many touches between emails, phone calls, texts, in-person conversation does it take for an investor to actually give you money to invest in your projects? And I'll narrow from 0 to 20.
I can't even guess.
I can tell you, as somebody in business development, on average, just to get a hold of somebody is 7.
Okay.
7.
It's actually going to hold of somebody.
I'm so glad I'm a journalist carrying the Benzinga name, because I send one email saying Benzinga interview and people will go like, sure.
but let's take it a step further. It takes 8 touches on average for an investor.
Wow.
The time you meet them, by the time they actually write you a check. That means, yeah, I go like in baseball, yeah, I go 8 for 8. Do you know how easy it is to screw up, to say something wrong, to write the improper email? And that's why when people follow us on LinkedIn, we do the Dr. David's Green Nugget Advisory Tips. We give out Green Nugget Advisory Tips at least twice a week to teach people some very simple things that they can do so they can become investable.
Is there one thing, or maybe there's a few things, but can you tell us like one thing that is a must, like a through line through all of your teachings, all of your advice, all of your, your not consulting. What is it? Like, what's one thing that everybody who raises money has to do?
Great. Our number one green nugget is this: failure to plan is planning to fail. It's really simple. Failure to plan is planning to fail. Mm-hmm. Now let's break that down. Great, Elliot, you're looking for money. Your minimum investment's 100 grand. All right, Elliot, what's my potential ROI? How am I getting paid back? You don't have that answer. That's failure to plan. Hey, Javier, your minimum investment's only 25 grand. You know what, Javier? I got 25 grand. I like what you said. Send me over the investment documents right now. Oh, I don't have that done yet. My lawyer hasn't done that yet. Well, that's failure to plan. So Pete, that's the number one thing that we see that happens most often. And the second thing is, have your house in order. Do not ask anyone for money. Don't ask your friends, colleagues, this or that, anyone for money until you are 100% prepared. The way we work here as advisors is that, and Javier, here's your answer. A consultant is someone that you hire to work on a specific problem retroactively. I got a problem on my website, I'll hire a website consultant. I got a problem with marketing. I'll hire a marketing consultant. But an advisor works on the short-term and long-term goals of a company. And we use a multidisciplinary approach towards your business. And here comes the kicker. And we have real-life experience. So not only are we advisors, we're also investors. Everyone on my team is an investor and invest in businesses. Everyone on my team has started a company and also sold a company as well too. We have the real life experience. That's what makes you an advisor. And my best analogy, being a medical guy by trade, and I do have two doctorate degrees, so I really am a medical guy. So we tell everyone we take a medical approach towards business. This is what I tell everyone. A personal trainer is not a physical therapist. They're not a licensed therapist. They're kind of like a consultant. But a physical therapist, technically speaking, is also a personal trainer. So every physical therapist technically could be a personal trainer. Not every personal trainer is a physical therapist. And that's the best way of looking at us.
Dude, you are the king of sound bites. I wish I could take a masterclass with you. Have you considered, and I have, like, this is not my question, by the way, Elliot, because we have one more each. But like, have you considered, like, going on TV, being like an anchor or something? Like, this is insane. Like,
well, we will announce it here. I was very anti having my own podcast. True story. We're in my Portland, Maine office. I got my COO up here. He gets off the plane and I go, listen, we're going straight to the grocery store. We're getting snowed in for 24 hours. He's like, what? And then the next morning I go, listen, you have till 8 p.m. tonight to convince me to do a podcast. He convinced me. And then we're actually going to be rolling this out probably in the next 30 to 60 days. We got the format down. It's industry agnostic.
Love it.
It's we ask everyone the same 8 to 10 questions, and it's really about using common sense. And one of the other biggest things is that for what we do is we're cost effective. And I have to stress this enough. We work by the hour. We take credit cards. And here comes the kicker. I mean, use your Benzinga conference as a great example. This happened in Benzinga, Chicago before. This happened in Benzinga, Miami. This happened in Benzinga, New York. We tell people, listen, you're not happy with us. There's any unused hours. We have a refund policy, no questions asked, for up to 6 months.
Wow.
So we tell you, the business owner, we take credit cards. We have a refund policy of no questions asked. We give you peace of mind. What do you have to lose?
Insane. I love it. So my question to you was, you said, like, you know, it's so easy to say one thing that will destroy your pitch, that will kill your investment opportunity, right? And I've said this before in on this show, for instance. For me, one of the things that I have encountered when raising money was that my projections were too conservative, right? Like, they were like, I want to see the best case scenario. Now, my question to you is, what are the worst things that one can say when trying to raise money?
Oh, man. Go back and look at our LinkedIn videos, because you'll see it. You will see a whole bunch of answers. But here's one of the biggest mistakes. Ellie and Javier, what's your minimum investment for an investor? And I get this, oh, I'm raising $2.2 million total. That wasn't my question.
Yeah, that's not, yeah.
What is the minimum someone can give you?
Mm-hmm.
And people don't have that answer. Or they say, oh, I'll let them decide. No.
Or the ask, well, right?
All right. And the second biggest mistake is that we see is, you're the CEO of the company. You're the founder of the company. I ask you a basic question. What are the terms? How are you going to pay back the investor? Oh, I don't know. I don't handle that. Well, you're the CEO and the founder of the company. You need to know the most basic information. And the third thing, which we see a lot, is this. Oh, my CFO handles my fundraising. You go to the CFO. Well, I've never done fundraising before, so I don't really know what I'm doing. So a lot of people forget, a CFO, chief financial officer, is working on the pro forma, working on the books. It's not that they know how to raise money, or if they've ever raised money before. And that's something that we hear a lot. We're prepping a lot of people from Benzinga, Chicago. We'll be there Tuesday morning. So if you're there early, make sure you look us up. But one of the things, we have some of our clients going to Benzinga, Chicago, and we're prepping them. Hey, you want a quick 20 to 30 second pitch, 3 foot putt. Do not have verbal diarrhea of the mouth. Book that follow-up meeting. And there's a small little things that occur. When someone says, great, I'm interested, let's follow up tomorrow, don't pick my brain for 20 to 30 more minutes. be respectful of my time, like being respectful of your time. And these are small little things that happen over and over and over again. And Elliot, just because we had the person on from Poseidon before, people, oh, the markets are so tight. The markets are so difficult. I highly disagree with you. I highly disagree with everyone that says that. You want to see me get mad and angry? Say, oh, no one's investing right now. That's total BS. Just have your house in order. And here's a great example, Javier. We had a client who's raising $22 million. No executive summary, no proforma, and it was a 41-page pitch deck. And it was not very good. And we said, no. The money you raise, the more you have to have your house in order ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people don't realize. People want to give you money. Less than one out of every 10 Americans own their own business here in the U.S. People want to give you money, but they want to have peace of mind. They want to make sure that, okay, hey, you're not like a high school senior, which we teach our clients, which means this. Javier, I don't know if you have any kids. Let's say you have a son. He's a senior in high school. Are you going to hand your son a check for $200,000 and say, son, I don't care if we go to college. I don't know what your plan is, but I hope one day you get a degree. Would you give your son, your 17-year-old kid, 200 grand? No, you wouldn't.
Hell no.
Why is it some random investors going to give you 200 grand if you have no plan of attack? Same exact thing. UCS, use common sense. And I am blessed. I've been in this industry since 2001. I actually did my own S1 in this industry, took my company public on the OTC, QB back in the day. I've started 8 cannabis companies in 5 different states. And I was very blessed to have a capital raising advisor way back in the day that taught me, because I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for them.
I love that. David, this is incredibly interesting, man. And I was about to go there. I was like, are investors investing? But you answered it before I could. So I'm going to adjust, right? Is there a specific type of business, a specific maturity of business right now that you see having success at a more common rate than others?
So we've helped 11 companies in the last 90 days secure capital from private investors.
Whoa.
Right? As of the last 2 weeks of August, that was 3 more companies. So 3 out of those 11. To answer your question is this. One, a lot of seasoned investors in cannabis are looking at non-plant touching deals right now. But for very new investors to the cannabis industry, they still like the plant touching. They really, really like the plant touching. But here it comes the key. It's 2023, people. We're entering the last month of the third quarter. We're here. Do your due diligence. There's something called publicly traded companies that release their financials. And you can go look at their financials and take your grow. And take whatever percentage of your grow that might be of a larger grow of another publicly traded company and just do a comparison. The fact is, if you don't have the data, if you, most people we say right now this, they're lazy when it comes to capital raising. They'll spend the time and money for everything else, but when it comes to actually raising the capital, they tend to be lazy. And I shouldn't really say lazy, more so than maybe they're burned out or they don't know who to turn to for advice. We are seeing a lot of people looking at grows, extraction facilities, even dispensaries. But the deals are getting funded, have their house in order ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very, very simplistic. For the seasoned cannabis investors, they're really looking at non-plant touching. And I'll tell everyone here right now, listen to this. Go to real estate meetup groups. Go to real estate networking events, because we're seeing a lot of real estate investors take the money that they've earned over the last couple of years, and now they're looking to invest in cannabis companies with it.
Interesting. David, we could talk about investing all day, my friend, as we said with Morgan. But that being said, we are at the end of our time here. It's a pleasure chatting with you. And honestly, the optimism is refreshing. It truly is. Keep it, my friend.
Yeah, you got to keep that PMA. And the last thing I'll say is this, Javier and Elliot, if you go to our website, ucsgreatness.com, we have a free self-assessment investor ready quiz. It's free. It takes 2 minutes. Fill it out.
That's cool.
And you get instant feedback.
I'm going to do it right now.
So if people forget that, like, well, I don't know if I'm ready. Where's a free quiz? I don't make one penny off of it. Just here's general education. As a medical practitioner, part of our job is to empower people with information and knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do here at UCS Advisory. We take that medical approach towards business so we can help you on your capital raising journey.
I love that. Dr. David of UCS Advisors, appreciate you, my friend. Positive mental attitude. We'll see you in 3 weeks.
See you, Sarah. Make sure you stop up for the luncheon because we'll be doing a skit for our 5-minute presentation.
Yes.
We'll do a live skit on the top mistakes people make when raising money.
Yes, I cannot wait. Thank you. Thank you, man. We'll see you soon.
Be good, everyone.
Later. Cheers. All right, y'all. Thank you all for sticking through with us. Your goals, fitness, I may have missed it, but what's the anticipated time frame for reschedule? We did see an analyst come out saying this time next year. So it's not going to be anytime soon, but that being said.
February, September of next year, maybe. Yeah.
February to September of next year is what you're saying? Okay, yeah. So wide time frame. Yeah, so AKA, I think it's going to be done before the election next year is what I'd say. Heath Koresh, thanks for tuning in. Joe Donnelly, appreciate you, sir. And with that being said, thank you all. Honestly, yeah, appreciate viewership sticking around the entire time. We're bringing with you a super cool and unique company. Yes Cannabis, their CEO, Matthew Martinez. Matt, what's up, my friend? How are you?
Elliot, doing well. How about yourself?
We're good. We're good. Obviously, a lot happening in the space, man. It's been quite the last 7 days.
It has been exciting to see the increased optimism. It seems like morale is lifted in the industry a little bit. There's a lot more positive speculation. It's been incredible to witness the past 7 days and just participate and be, you know, in and around it.
Matt, as an entrepreneur in the space, and I'll let Javi talk. I apologize, Javier. But as an entrepreneur in the space, you know, it seems there are a couple camps to this news. There's a camp that rescheduling to Schedule 3 is a positive incremental change, is a good thing for the space. We're not getting holistic everything we want, right? So camp one. There's camp two who thinks this is going to restructure the industry. It's really not good for us. You know, it's the first camp is maybe a little bit greedy because this is what they are settling for. It puts money in their pockets. I'm just curious, like, do you see yourself sitting in that camp one as somebody who sees this as a positive?
So the way our team has kind of broken it down internally, we look at it as immediate, near, and long term. And I think in the immediate term, it's a huge positive and a benefit, right? I think increased optimism in the industry as a whole, from the investor perspective, the operator perspective, is good to advance the industry forward. It also shows I think the historical efforts are starting to take effect and move the needle marginally, right? So I think all that is good. As far as near to long term, we believe it will instill a sense of optimistic uncertainty, right? So there's a lot of speculation, a lot of crystal balling going on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of game theory, you know, what are the legal implications of Schedule 3? What are the financial implications? What are the regulatory implications, right? Is it going to look like ketamine? Is it going to look like other substances on Schedule 3, right? This is all to be determined. And that's where we leave it, right? We take it one day at a time. We know that today there's a sense of optimism, but going forward, it actually brings a level of uncertainty. And, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. We're heads down, focused on continuing to build our company, regardless of opinion. But, you know, that's how we're looking at things today.
I love that, man. Honestly, I'm kind of done with crystal balling. Like, you know, we can anticipate certain things like, okay, maybe when might a rescheduling occur. Okay, there are a few specific moments during the legislative process, but like most other things, we are guessing blindly and we missed our estimations so many times. The market size, the rate of legalization, you know, it's so I love this refreshing perspective. And you know, you mentioned you're focusing on Yes Cannabis right now, on building a durable company. So explain what you do, because you do a bunch of stuff, right? And it's not 100% easy to figure out all of the things you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And appreciate the validation on that mindset. I would say that is been developed over years and years in this industry, right? I think so many people take the position of playing the game, waiting for the rules to change. And what we have done is just adopted the rules and agreed to play them as it, play the game as is, right? Nice. Now, as far as Yes Cannabis has been an evolution and kind of in its most recent form is essentially an MSO built on the back of manufacturing, right? And the reason we believe that that is the most efficient and effective way to expand into new territories is that it traditionally the manufacturing and distribution license tends to be the access point into a supply chain within any given territory. And our goal is to build a brand platform on the back of our infrastructure that allows for brands to expand and grow regionally more seamlessly and effectively, right? So we're seeing this evolution of an asset-light brand model. And then what we're seeing is opcos have to become more brand agnostic, right? And so if a brand, an opco is brand agnostic, your client and brands are asset light, your client becomes the brand. And if we can, you know, expand through manufacturing operations into multiple states and create a standardized manufacturing and distribution operation that we can then leverage for the betterment of all brands, we believe that it'll, you know, kind of be the rising tide that lifts all ships.
You were talking about supply chains and what you do. And I'm curious, what's the problem? What's your problem with fragmented supply chains? Can you explain what that is and why it's a problem? I'm very curious.
Absolutely. So depending on how fragmented your supply chain is, right? Depending on what territory you're looking at. But regardless, you know, there's an increased level of difficulty when you need to source raw materials for any finished good. And the number of people who can transport those raw materials from business to business is finite, right? There's not an exponential number of them. There's an increased cost to fragmented supply chain, right? And you know, layer on the regulatory oversight, it just makes it extremely difficult. However, those are here to stay. I don't think they're going anywhere. They're part of the fixed rules of the game that we all have to learn to operate by. But I think this goes back to kind of why we've built our model on the back of manufacturing and distribution, is that we can remove, by banding together collectively, we can remove a lot of redundancies and costs that we are all collectively suffering from, right? Now, I earned my stripes here in California. And in the early stages of California, everybody had this mentality they were going to do it themselves, both from kind of a pride and ego perspective, but also from a survival perspective, because there were no options, right? There were no large-scale third-party distributors in 2018. Everybody had to build their own distribution company. They had to have their own manufacturing opco. So they were manufacturing their own product. They were distributing their own product. And there's an extreme cost with all of that, right? It's its own business outside of, you know, selling branded goods. And so what we've seen is that there's a lot of brands that have a high level of perceived success in market, but are financially not very successful because they're being burdened by this extreme cost of the opco. And now they're adopting this multi-state asset-light expansion, whereas in new territories as they open up, or even in existing territories, if we were to consolidate our efforts under one opco, well, that opco becomes profitable. It's no longer a liability because it's sustainable. And your brand and product are now a profitable endeavor, right? And so you can see how this starts to build compounding value for all parties involved by removing redundancies, right? And driving efficiency, stuff like that.
Super interesting, man. You know, just to kind of point out here, it feels like a pretty strong value for what you can offer the industry is your data. On the CPG and brands level, you know, you can really compare these different markets, what brands are having success, you know, who is growing faster than who, what the demand is, you know, the demand aspect, you know, seems like equally as good for these brands as say like a retail data companies like Hoodie and Headset. So in regards to that data, is that a tool that you would offer companies themselves in order to maybe look at markets and decide which ones they want to expand into at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently our organization is very data driven. So we have hand selected off the shelf solutions in our tech stack, piece them together using various APIs in order to provide brand insights is what we're defining them as, right? If you're a brand and you want to look at your retail sales data, or you want to look at your work in progress on the manufacturing side, there's multiple platforms you have to log into to see them, right? There's not one dashboard that kind of brings that all together. And that's what our platform does. We attempt to give you visibility into all territories that you're operating in across the supply chain in that territory, right? So that you could see raw materials, work in progress, finished inventory through recently distributed goods. And the mm-hmm. other thing we're super passionate about is, you know, really trying to crack this D2C code, right? The whole idea of selling direct to your consumer and allowing the brand mm-hmm. to gather first party data so that they can, one, you know, decrease the acquisition cost, to build retention and loyalty to their consumer, and understand the true LTV of their consumer, right? And Javier, this kind of goes back to your point of fragmented supply chain where, you know, the brands have very little visibility or insights as to who is walking through the front door of a dispensary to buy their product. They know X number of units are moving through this shelf on this interval, but who bought them, right? We don't know who John or Jane Smith is. We don't know where they're located, their age or anything like that. And I think in order for us to mature as an industry, those are valuable insights that will allow the brands to progress and grow and inevitably become the marquee brands of tomorrow, right? I think it's essential to have first party data in order to cement your place in the industry of tomorrow. Without it, I think the cost of user acquisition, retention, and loyalty is astronomical, and mm-hmm. it is almost unachievable.
Mm-hmm. So a couple, kind of a two-sided question for me here. I want to get a little bit more specific. First off, of all these different products that you can work with, is there one that is economically easier or one that is economically harder to work with than the other? Say like beverage over flowers, pre-roll over edibles, things of that nature.
Absolutely. So I think from a manufacturing distribution perspective, any value add manufacturing is definitely more difficult. Now, what do I mean by value add manufacturing? I mean, taking the raw input of cannabis, such as flower or oil, and then taking that and infusing it, activating it, encapsulating it into some sort of finished good that requires additional steps for it to be quote unquote finished, right? Or completed. Those are generally very unique processes per like brand specifications or organization specifications. So learning those and replicating them to the same quality that the brand would do themselves is definitely a challenge. But I think is also why, you know, value add manufactured goods command a higher price point in market, but then also generally have healthier margins, right? Mm-hmm. You're not taking a commodity at the end of the day, like such as flour or distillate, and then selling it at retail. or packaging and selling it at retail. There takes a lot more intention, innovation, and insight into creating those products. And then each of them will have its own distribution requirements, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're dealing with very high quality solventless concentrates, right, most of those concentrates are transported in sub 50 degree temperatures, which means you now are transporting using freezer vans, not refrigerated vans. Beverages take up space and generally are climate controlled as well. So everything has a specific nuance, and you try to build out your operations to service the largest amount of products possible. And you kind of can't chase outliers, if that makes sense. You try to build things to capture 80% of products produced and hope that you know, you can service as many people as possible through that opco, because inherently you want to be brand agnostic.
Absolutely, man. That's super interesting and the intricacies of what you do. Now, just a quick, one more quick follow-up. Are you able to say who the top performing brand and style of product that you work with is? Or maybe what it is?
Yeah. So I can't disclose the brand, but I would say the number one product category we're currently working in are gummies. And that's in multiple territories. It seems that the gummy or edible category is growing very rapidly. And now we're seeing an evolution within those categories of kind of permutations of infusion concentrate infusions, such as, you know, we're moving away from just a distillate like edible into, you know, live resin, which is a hydrocarbon extraction, even it's a solventless for a more, I guess you can call it elevated experience or connoisseur grade experience, where they're using, you know, more intentional manufacturing practices to extract and infuse the goods. And so that's really exciting. You know, an example would be, you know, Kiva coming out with the, you know, they have their Caminos, they have their Lost Farm live resin, and have recently come out with their live rosin line. And so you're starting to see those trends play out as markets mature in places like Massachusetts, Michigan. And that segment is continuing to grow very rapidly. We don't play much in beverages currently, mostly gummies, flower-based products, tinctures, and infused pre-rolls.
That's awesome, Matt. Appreciate you being on here today, man. We are coming to the end of our time here. Anything else that you'd like our audience to know about you guys, about near future, about long-term, you know, about Yes Cannabis?
Yeah, absolutely. I would encourage anybody who runs a brand that's interested in expanding into a new territory to reach out. We come from a brand building background. That's how I got started in the industry, was through building brands and products and launching my own. And so we've really just developed our insights into the industry through doing, not through theory, right? It turned out that a lot of our theories were off substantially, and we had to continuously refine them to actually identify what works. And we feel good about what's going on right now. And, you know, we're here to, we look at ourselves as almost like an open source company, right? Mm-hmm. We want to share our insights, our experience with others, so that they can learn from our historical failures, so that they don't have to experience them. And we can kind of serve as a tip of the spear for the industry to help us all collectively grow and mature.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Matt Martinez, CEO of Yes Cannabis. Ton more coming from you, man. You're building a really, really cool company. I know you have a lot of cool partners in the space. You're going to be around for a long time, and I look forward to watching you grow. But thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you. And let's get you back on once some news comes out, and, you know, let us know who that top partner is one day.
Absolutely. Thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Javier. Really appreciate you guys. Yeah. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and talk to you soon.
You too, sir. Talk soon.
Bye.
All right, Javi, three awesome guests today, my friend. It was a good one.
Wow.
It was a good one today.
Woo! Love this show, man.
Easycannabis.com. Come join us in Chicago.
Chi-town.
What's up?
Let's go. All right, y'all. BZCannabis.com, Benzinga.com/cannabis for Javi and all his news. Apple, Spotify for this podcast, Cannabis Daily. We're starting that back up tomorrow after a week and a half away. And then we'll be doing that for the rest of the year, giving you all your news. Until Thursday, have an absolutely stellar week. We'll see you then. Peace.